From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula.
Welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host for this week, Junie Kim. While North Korea under the Kim regime has tried to maintain tight control of information sources within its borders, the North Korean populace in recent years has found creative ways to access outside media, which include everything from foreign news broadcasts to the latest South Korean dramas. Nat Kretchen, deputy director at the Open Technology Fund, participated in a panel here at KEI this week and discussed his research on North Korea's developing information environment. As a quick plug, you can view the full video of the panel on our YouTube page, which you can get to from our homepage at keia.org. Nat sat down with me afterwards to talk more about how everyday North Koreans access information and how the regime is fighting back against the increase of foreign media in the country. Enjoy. Well, thank you, Nat, for coming in and sitting down with us. This is a great pleasure for us.
My pleasure as well.
Just to start off, can you talk a little bit about your work and the research that you do in regards to North Korea?
Sure. So most of my research focuses on information penetration into North Korea and the effects thereof. The kind of tools that I use to do that are generally surveys and other interviews of North Korean defectors, refugees, and travelers. It's something that we've been working on for, about 15 years at this point, though I've been involved for the last 8 or 9, I suppose. And it's really because it's relatively difficult to, you know, conduct a survey with relatively recently arrived defectors or refugees. It's a relatively unique finger in the wind just for social trends on the ground in North Korea. The kind of surveys we do aren't going to give you much insight into the hyper elite, but they are a relatively useful window, I hope, into kind of what's going on in the ground in North Korea.
So like you mentioned, it's a bit of a window, maybe an imperfect one, but still a window. But through that, what do we know about how North Koreans consume foreign media and how do they access it?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of change on that front. And like many things when we're talking about the evolution of North Korea recently, we kind of start from the famine period of the mid to late 90s. When the socialist economy and the security apparatus broke down, it allowed folks to get a lot more access to information, both kind of human information as people moved back and forth across the Chinese border, as they created trading networks, kind of supply and selling networks in the kind of coping mechanism style of early ground-up North Korean marketization post-famine, as well as kind of devices coming in from China that allowed people to more directly access outside media. And that, in some cases, could be news media, television broadcasts along the border with China or South Korea, radio broadcasts nationwide if you had the right equipment. And increasingly over that, essentially the Kim Jong-il era, we saw the influx of South Korean dramas, Chinese dramas, all sorts of entertainment media that proved to be very popular in North Korea, where they're relatively information and media starved.
So how ubiquitous is foreign media consumption in North Korea to just ordinary North Koreans?
The way that I generally tend to think about it is kind of from an ecosystem perspective. The most common and trusted form of information in North Korea is word of mouth. North Koreans talk to each other, and that's how they, you know, kind of learn about the world in many ways. They consume a lot of domestic media, but when it comes to things outside of the direct state lines and propaganda thereof, it's word of mouth. That said, most North Koreans have at this point definitely seen outside entertainment media, South Korean dramas and the like. Those, because of the way they've proliferated, because initially when they came in, they were relatively less sensitive. They were seen as, you know, just a form of entertainment. You could get in trouble, but often you could pay a bribe to get out of potentially getting in trouble for viewing those. Those proliferated quite widely, but much more regular and robust distribution networks in the places you'd expect, along the border, kind of coming into Pyongyang, the places where people could essentially demand and secure that kind of content. Radio, other broadcast technologies tend to have a more demographically delimited audience. They're kind of more sensitive. They often have news about the leadership and other very sensitive topics in North Korea. and they take equipment that is relatively sensitive. You can't legally have a free-tuning shortwave radio inside of North Korea. So people either have to essentially go in and unfix the dials on their old medium-wave radios, or they have to have a smuggled-in shortwave radio that they use to access those. And so those, you know, that's never going to be a mass media in North Korea, but because it is the most information-rich source of outside media coming into the country, lots of folks who take the risk and are interested in that then become important focal points for word-of-mouth dissemination from there. So I think the secondary audience for something like radio broadcasts is probably larger than the kind of initial listening audience.
And these methods, the radios that can are free-tuned to any station or USBs that do contain South Korean or Chinese movies and dramas, is there a sense that the appetite for these is growing in North Korea?
I think we can definitely say that demand for media, for information, for entertainment still vastly exceeds the supply of it. So we saw a really big influx kind of post-famine continue to build up to the point at which, you know, at the start of the Kim Jong-un era, DVD players and TVs seemed like they were close to ubiquitous in North Korea, that just about, our indications at least, were that just about every citizen would have access to one of these devices, even if they didn't personally own one, and that a lot of those DVD players, which in many cases had direct USB inputs, were used to, at least upon occasion, view foreign outside media. So it is definitely a very widespread phenomenon, even if it's hard to gauge exactly the, you know, is there greater demand now than there was a few years ago.
How have technology advances over the past decade or so changed how North Koreans consume media?
The first wave of digital technologies that were coming across the border from China really seemed to facilitate easier access, sharing, consumption of foreign media. So we're talking about Notels, the kind of screen-connected DVD player, which were convenient in North Korea for lots of reasons. They were easier to hide if you needed to. They could run on batteries when the power cut out. They had USB inputs. So these USB drives that were kind of starting to flood the markets in North Korea could be put to good use in terms of disseminating and accessing foreign media, because all of a sudden you had an interface through which you could use that USB stick, which, because laptops and computers aren't that prevalent, really was a pretty big game changer in how these kind of entertainment media get distributed within North Korea. Interestingly, this next generation of more technologically advanced devices seems to be coming from the government as part of a brand new information control strategy that the government's currently trying to enact. I think they were very cognizant of the fact that their people had a lot more access to outside information than they once did. And in response, as things have become a bit more stable inside of the country, as the economic fortunes of the government haven't been as dire, they have really set about trying to stem the influx of foreign media and restrict the way that North Koreans could access it. And instead of going kind of back to Kim Il-sung era prohibitions on all devices and information and trying to enforce that through a mass mobilization human security model, they were much more focused on giving regular citizens more advanced devices, which they had ultimate control over, and so are using a kind of network strategy for information control rather than kind of trying to go back in time.
So you mentioned this new strategy that North Korea is trying to utilize to control how information is consumed in North Korea. In instances where someone is caught just watching like the latest South Korean drama or whatever it is, what type of punishments happen for these ordinary North Koreans?
Yeah, the difficult part about that question, while it's very important, is how arbitrary the punishments can be, particularly in the immediate post-famine aftermath. security forces were very willing to take bribes to overlook these kind of offenses. And so as long as you had enough money or enough kind of political relationship capital, you know, to pay a bribe or to avoid punishment, then, you know, you were able to watch that kind of foreign media with relative impunity so long as you weren't kind of flouting it. We've seen more recently the formation of specially tasked security units like Group 109 that are tasked specifically to look for the kind of ideological infractions that foreign media consumption falls under. And the effect has been pretty striking in terms of the amount of resensitization of some of these entertainment media in particular, but also, of course, your radio and TV viewing. So it's become harder to pay bribes, and it seems like the possibility that you'll end up in a political prison camp for having watched a drama or a movie has increased markedly, even if, in some cases, you can still pay a bribe.
So due to the danger of what could happen if you were caught, what do we know about how North Koreans are adapting to that? And what precautionary measures do they take to still indulge in foreign media but without being caught?
Yeah, there's a lot of essentially kind of low-level operational security procedures that the North Koreans are quite good at in terms of the way that they use the devices at their disposal. USBs were a big innovation for many North Koreans, not just because they allowed them to share content more easily, but also because as DVD players had direct USB inputs, instead of having an incriminating DVD stuck in the player when the security forces cut the power in the building to do random inspections, you could just pull your USB drive out, and that meant that it would look like that totally legal North Korean drama you had left in the cartridge was what you had been playing. So definitely the kind of concealability of some of the USBs, micro SDs, newer non-network technologies have been a real boon to that kind of operational security practices around the kind of sharing and foreign media consumption culture.
So the crackdown on foreign media, do you think that comes from a place of increased sensitivity by the Kim Jong-un regime? It was just in 2014 whenever the major cyber hack happened of Sony because of the satirical movie, The Interview. Right. Is there reason to believe that the crackdown is because of the regime feels some sort of sensitivity towards foreign media coming into North Korea?
I don't know that you can peg it as neatly to something like them viewing The Interview as extremely provocative. A big part of North Korea's control strategy from day one was to make sure that your only source of information was kind of what the party told you. And they did this both through kind of the domestic media and propaganda, but also through personal isolation and making sure that your primary social relations were funneled vertically through, you know, groups and other organs of the state rather than, you know, with kind of other social connections or business connections. Much of the system was designed to make sure that you individuals were isolated and then their information came more or less directly from the top and the ideological guidance thereof. What I think we've seen recently is just acknowledgement that there was a real problem of the security forces not being able to keep up with the amount of foreign information that was flowing in, and North Koreans deciding that the way to reestablish control over their information environment was to push everyone into networked environments, you know, initially cell phones, but perhaps more intranet to come, so that instead of relying on this mass mobilization human security force, they can essentially automatically censor anything you try to put into your device that doesn't even need kind of human intervention and makes the kinds of foreign media that exist on USBs or micro SDs unplayable on these new devices, coupled with remote surveillance from the center. Now, instead of having a physical person checking every home, you can have a much smaller coterie of people who are surveilling kind of key targets over the network without actually being physically there in person. And that combination is pretty powerful from a kind of constrained resources perspective.
We're about wrapped up here with our conversation. Do you have any last questions or thoughts you'd like to leave with our audience?
Sure. I mean, I think from the kind of information perspective, this new era is going to be really fascinating. On the one hand, we see that the authorities are getting much more sophisticated in the way they are tackling the problem of diffuse information media spread within North Korea. But on the other hand, the very technologically advanced tools that they are supplying their citizens with in order to enact control over them give the citizens the ability to connect with one another over much more broad geographic expanses and much closer to real time. They essentially give society much more catalyzed organizing power. And that's certainly not to say that we're going to see folks in the street anytime soon. But it does mean personal individual isolation strategy that North Korea has long pursued has effectively been abandoned. And that's, I think, a very interesting dynamic to be cognizant of as we kind of see how the state and society negotiate the path forward in terms of continued economic development and social control.
Great. Well, thank you so much. This was a great conversation. And yeah, definitely a topic worth looking into for years and decades to come.
My pleasure.
That's all for this episode of Korean Context. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. As always, please subscribe and like our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you here again next week for another episode.